voice of the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I don't think we're having a recession. We're doing tremendously well. Our consumers are rich. I gave a tremendous tax cut, and they're loaded up with money. They're buying. I saw the Walmart numbers. They were through the roof just 2 days ago. That's better than any poll. That's better than any economist.
That's President Trump with another public pushback this week against predictions of an economic recession in the U.S. Now, you don't have to think back too far to the Great Recession 12 years ago. Well, big or small, what would another recession mean for you and me? What would it look like? Well, we're talking about it tonight. And my guests are Dr. William Spriggs, economics professor here at Howard University, and Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at The Washington Post and author of the 21-Day Financial Fast. Thank you so much for joining me, everyone. I want to encourage our listeners to give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, and certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Spriggs, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Okay, Michelle.
And Michelle.
Yeah, how are you, Michelle?
Hi, both of you. Good to be here.
There you go. I can hear those pennies jingling in Michelle's pockets already. Let us talk about these discussions about recession, Dr. Spriggs. Why are we hearing this all of a sudden? What has happened?
Well, the people in New York are nervous on Wall Street because we had what's called an inversion of the interest rate. Typically, when you loan someone money for 30 years, you need a higher interest rate. You're being compensated because you don't know what inflation is going to be over 30 years. You don't know how the economy is going to be over 30 years. So you want to be compensated with a higher interest rate. If I loan you money over a two-year period, I should be able to forecast – I should be able to better forecast what inflation is going to be. And I shouldn't think things are that risky. So when the interest rates invert,
that inversion real yield curve that we heard so much about.
Right. Yeah. When I start demanding a higher interest rate for a short-term loan than for a long-term loan, it means I'm really nervous about the short horizon, the next year or the year after that. I'm really nervous about where the economy is. And a lot of people on Wall Street, of course, think that bond dealers, because they're lending money, are better barometers of where the economy is going than the stock market, which has been going very well for the last couple of years. So that's what made everyone nervous. If you look at real economy numbers, there are reasons we should have been nervous. Auto sales peaked last fall, and housing sales for the first two quarters of this year were down. And new business formation rates are down this year compared to last year. So the consequence is we've seen slower job creation this year than last year. And we know that incomes haven't recovered. They've been very sluggish. We saw a burst of energy in terms of wage growth. It was very short-lived. And we're back to very modest wage growth. So incomes aren't really recovering that quickly. The median household income, the person at the middle of the distribution, just recently, that was about a year ago, got back to its 2008 level. And the African-American community, we're still trying to get back to that. But the shocker is getting back to the 2008 level, that is before the Great Recession, that's not back to 2000. So that's a 20-year period. These aren't the same people, of course, because people age and the people in the middle change. But the fact that the middle of the distribution isn't back to where it was in 2000 and it's just struggled to get back to 2008, shows a lot of difficulty in the real economy. That is where we really produce things, where people get wages for selling things, making things.
And on that bond issue, in real overly simplified terms, if I'm loaning you money, you better give me my money now instead of later, because I don't know what's going to happen later.
That's what the higher interest rate signifies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michelle, your thoughts about the threat of a possible recession. Are you doing more walking than putting gas in your car? What's the deal?
You know, I'm always in recession mode. It's just how I'm wired. I always try to make sure that I've got a cushion in my budget, that I'm under, you know, that I don't overspend what I make, that I live below my means. And that's what, you know, I preach all the time through my columns, through my work, through my church, is that there will always be a recession. There will always be a downturn. That's how our economy works. It's up, it's down. And so you need to always kind of put yourself in a position as best you can to prepare for the inevitable downturn. And so this should not be shocking to a lot of people. You know, we've had a great run with the market and the economy. And not that I wish that there's going to be a recession, but you just need to prepare for it. And so, but you know, it's hard for me to get people to save when times are good, because that paycheck is steady, you know, everything's going well, and they're like, they just like, what? I can never not have this great stuff happening to me. And so if I can say there's an upside to all of this worry, is that people are now hopefully focused on their finances again, to prepare for what is probably going to happen, which is a recession.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about recession 2020. Is it a possibility? What would it look like? What does it mean to you? And what do you have to do now to prepare in the event that something like that happens? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. One of the things that happened just this week, Dr. Spriggs, is that the president pulled back from tariffs on China. And he, paraphrasing here, said that he didn't want, you know, consumers to suffer, even though from the very beginning of his discussion about a trade war and imposing tariffs on China, that consumers wouldn't. Experts said that consumers would be hurt. What impact might this have on a possible recession?
It's creating uncertainty for businesses who have backed the president on his tax cut. And to that point, as erratic as his behavior has been, and as much as he has done to make any rational person think there is huge uncertainty about the economy, they were responding positively because they got their tax cut. They worry about the trade war with China. This is about business. This is not about consumers. They feel nervous because they have a lot of money invested in China. So the unease that you're seeing is because suddenly this erratic behavior affects them. To my astonishment, right, if they were objective, then they should have been nervous a long time ago. This man changes with the day. Mm-hmm. He changes with the hour. So, you know, one moment he says, I want a payroll tax. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No, I don't. Yes, I do. So that kind of unsteady behavior should make anyone who's planning feel nervous. But the only thing they feel nervous about are their investments in China. So what has made them unsettled is that. And the problem is there are weaknesses in the real economy. Because
when you say real economy, what do you mean by that?
So real economy means where we work and where we live. There's finance, and that's Wall Street. The two intersect because the level of income inequality in the United States is huge. We're close to half the income coming to the top 10%. a lot of their income comes from what happens on Wall Street. So when Wall Street takes a downturn, it does affect the economy in the real sense, because that's half of consumption. That's where half the money is coming from. Hmm. So, but in the real economy, that is where the rest of us live, wages have not responded as well to this recovery as economists had anticipated. At a very low unemployment rate, we would think wages would be much higher. But when you look at what fueled the recovery in terms of production and jobs, heavy borrowing for autos, over $1 trillion in debt for autos, that reached a peak. The Fed raised interest rates, which directly affects the interest rate on borrowing for a car. And the Fed raised the interest rate to the point where car sales not only stopped slowing, they actually reversed. So right away, you would think, well, maybe this is where the recessions are going to come from, because we won't have as many auto jobs, and auto jobs have been very slow over this last year. We know there's weakness in the retail sector. A number of companies continue to go bankrupt, again, because we have weak demand. So in the real economy, where there are actual people making things, buying things, selling things, we saw this weakness. And the weakness in home sales. The way the U.S. market is geared, the current generation who's, you know, somewhere between 25 and 35 should be buying homes. We know they are heavily indebted from student loans. We have seen the data from J.P. Morgan's Institute that tracks how consumers who bank with J.P. Morgan have been spending money who have debt. We know the strain this is putting on them. They're not buying homes. When they don't buy homes, that means older people like me don't sell homes, and new home sales help to spur furniture, appliances, and other jobs, because people stock their homes with these new appliances. So there are a lot of reasons why the economy is slowing because of this high level of inequality. And the problem we have is that the president, as you saw initially, said, well, I'm going to do a payroll tax cut that would help consumers. But the Republicans in Congress are currently saying they're going to cut food assistance, which definitely would hurt consumers. And the president says he wants to do a capital gains tax. Now, that's great for people on Wall Street, but has nothing to do with the people struggling to buy cars or buy homes.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about a recession 2020. Could it happen? What would it look like? What does that mean to you? And what should you do right now to prepare for something like that? Again, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Michelle, I'm sure you were listening to what Dr. Spriggs was saying. To your personal finance mind, what is the first thing that someone should start doing once you are concerned about the possibility of that? Let us assume that they don't have the Michelle Singletary mindset that says life is a recession.
Right. Well, right now, there's actually two things that people should be doing. The first is saving more. So that means going to your budget and figuring out where you can cut so that you can boost your savings, particularly if you're in an area where you might fear some job loss if there's a recession. Many of the industries that Dr. Spriggs just mentioned, retail, auto, so you want to boost your savings. And then secondly, you want to get rid of your debt. So you should be on an aggressive plan to pay off your debt. You mentioned, you know, auto loans and home loans and student loans and credit card debt. You most definitely should not be carrying credit card debt. So right now, if you're listening, if you have a credit card balance that you cannot pay off next month, that you need to take those cards out of your wallet and your purse, put them in a bag, put some water in the bag, and put that bag in the freezer. You absolutely need to not be buying anything else or using those cards. But now, if you know that there's a possible layoff, that there was a possible layoff even before this talk of recession, you don't want to pay off too much debt. You want to stockpile cash. because you want to have money available to you while you look for a job. So that would be the only time I would say, you know, scale back your debt reduction if you know for sure or you suspect that you might lose your job.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the possibilities of a recession in 2020 or beyond. What does that mean to you? Let me go to the phone lines. Dave calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Dave. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
With the looming threat of a recession, what does that mean for the aggressive investor and saver, 401k, IRAs, mutual funds? What can you speak on to that, and how will that affect?
First of all, how old are you, Dave?
53.
You're 53, because I would imagine the age of the person who has an IRA or a SEP or 401k or 403b, that's where it would matter. Go ahead, Dr. Spriggs.
Yes, it would matter because the downturn isn't likely to be like 2008. It would be almost impossible. The uniqueness of that recession was it was driven by inflated home prices and the way in which the banking industry was using the mortgages as part of their capital. There are huge debt risk in the economy because of the level of corporate debt, but that level of debt isn't going to affect banks in the same way. They don't use it as capital. So we're not going to see a financial collapse. What we're more likely to see is what we saw in 2001 when the stock market bubble from the dot-com took place, where the unemployment level went up, not as dramatically as in 2008. The stock market went down, and then it recovered. And if you're 53, it'll recover by the time you're 66. So the thing there is not to panic. But it's likely to be long-term because many of the stopgaps that save us from a worse recession have been weakened. There are a number of states like North Carolina, which is nearby, that have weakened their unemployment insurance system. So workers will not get 26 weeks of unemployment insurance in that state, and there are several other states that copied that mode. And a downturn, unemployment insurance is very important to making the recovery come really fast. And then we see the Republicans don't want to help people with food assistance, which is another very important stopgap that keeps the economy going even deeper.
I need to take a break. Dave, thank you so much. When we come back, we're going to talk to Alan calling from Maryland. So, Alan, don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program, and we will get to you straight away. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about recession 2020. Is it going to happen? What does it look like? And what might that mean to you? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM. Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a bit.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about an economic recession. Is it a possibility? And if so, what might that look like and what impact may it have on you and your family? My guests are Dr. William Spriggs, economics professor here at Howard University, and Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist at the Washington Post and author of the 21-Day Financial Fast. Lines are open. If you have a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alan calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good afternoon. I apologize for the background noise.
Go right ahead. You're fine.
Personally, you know, I'm always in a recession mode. But there is a technical definition of a recession, and if your guest could explain that, if a certain number of months when the economy is functioning at a certain pace, could he explain that?
Yeah, excellent
question.
I'll
take that off the air.
Okay, thank you, Alan. Go right ahead, Doctor.
So our recessions are dated by what's called a – there's a committee on the National Bureau of Economic Research that studies business cycles. Generally speaking, if we have two quarters, which is 6 months, consecutive 6 months of the GDP, which is our measure of all economic activity in the economy, if for 6 months it goes down, that's what we typically call a recession. Most recessions, that's as long as they last.
6 months.
6 months. And in the case of the 2001 downturn, that was 6 months. 2008 was different, but again, that was different because it was the financial sector itself that collapsed, and the result of everyone doing what Michelle tells people to do made it worse because everybody said, oops, I better hurry up and stop buying, and I better get my debt in order, and if everybody decides at the same time they're going to stop consuming, it exacerbates the problem. And in this case, because people were indebted to their home, right? The first thing you're going to do is I'm going to keep my house.
So the economy contracted and people kind of stayed home.
It contracted even more because they were losing money on their homes. They were losing money on their retirement because the stock market crashed. They were trying to keep their kids in college. So the number one thing after that, don't buy a car. It was the biggest drop in auto sales in American history. And if we stop buying cars, we stop hiring auto workers, and then the whole thing starts to cascade from there. And so that dramatic drop in auto sales, the stop in the home mortgage, meaning people couldn't sell their homes, so the stop in that market as well meant a tremendous loss of jobs because you lost auto jobs, you lost construction jobs, you lost all the jobs for people making the appliances. And people took very seriously not consuming because they are trying to get their debt in order because they're trying to save their house. We had people stop eating out. We had people stop eating in. Food consumption even dropped. That was an unprecedented collapse in the economy. Typically, like in 2001, it's nowhere near as extreme. But remember, in 2001, even though we didn't lose as many jobs as in 2008, it still took us all the way to 2007 to get the jobs back lost in 2001. And
then the jobs began to fall away after 2008 again.
Well, because it was smoke and mirrors, as we ended up finding out. The recovery was through people borrowing on their homes.
Hmm. Now, as Dr. Spriggs talks about this, you know, that's the macro picture. On a micro level, on your individual level, you can't be worrying about the macro economy and say, well, I'm going to buy a car so everybody can have a job.
That's probably also why people, as we saw, we've seen over the past decade or so, people stopped buying new cars and bought used cars.
Right.
But
here's what I'm saying. I'm not saying don't, you know, boost the economy by buying things. I'm just saying don't go into debt to do it. My husband and I just bought a car. New car. I know it's going to be shocking to a lot of people.
Oh, my.
We bought it with cash. So we, you know, there's the salesperson who got a commission, the finance person who helped us with the debt. I mean, so, you know, we sent all three of our kids to college with cash. So that school, those schools got the money. They can hire the professors. You know, I am, you know, personal finance columnist. So I'm looking at the macro and micro, but I'm just saying, folks, that we can still have a robust economy, but that doesn't mean that you should be going into debt or using leverage to boost your lifestyle. And furthermore, we really probably, this is a long-term conversation, but, you know, move our economy away from consumption as the way to keep us rolling. We do need to bring back manufacturing. We do need to bring back other areas that will keep our economy steady that doesn't rely on people having a lot of debt.
But moving it from consumption to what?
Manufacturing, making stuff, you know, people you know, services, things that don't just, I mean, we, you know, with the president, one of the reasons why he wanted to pull back on the trade war, what did he say? Oh, because Christmas is coming, so all y'all can go out there and shop. You know, when I look at people's personal budgets, I have the, you know, fortunate or unfortunate of being able to actually see people's budgets. And I'm telling you, from people making six-figure salaries to people making, you know, $20,000 a year, the amount of debt people are carrying and how they are over-leveraged themselves from buying a home and a car and all kinds of stuff, it's startling, surprising, and shocking.
Well, yeah, the key is we have to go back to paying people.
What do you mean by that?
Well, and from 1946 to around 1980, the wages of workers went up with productivity. So the way the economy functioned was I got paid more money, so I bought more stuff.
So as companies did well, they paid their workers more. That now, less of that is happening now.
There's a huge gap between the productivity that's going on and what workers take home. The result is we make stuff, but we don't pay people to buy it. And the folks on Wall Street are very happy because they're happy to lend you the money, which is not the way to run the economy. The way to run the economy is to pay people more money. And this is why what Michelle was saying, the reason we have unemployment insurance, the reason we have food assistance, the reason we have all of these programs are precisely her point. You personally can't save the economy. So the point of having unemployment insurance is to make sure if there's a downturn, we fill the gap through public policy. So, I mean, everybody wants to say, oh, these people are late. No, the reason we call these safety nets, it's not safety nets for the individual. It's a safety net for the economy. If everybody decides that I'm losing income, I have to save myself, then we're all in trouble. So that's why we have these safety nets. So states like North Carolina are undermining the safety of all of us when they attack their unemployed workers, because all of us are going to be hit worse as those people lose jobs and are forced to save on their own. Mm-hmm. This is the lesson from the Great Depression.
It's such an important thing that the Dr. Spriggs is saying. And the other thing is we have to get off of this idea that we don't. Now, this is going to be shocking to a lot of people, but we don't want to pay a fair wage price for things. We want everything so super cheap. There's a cost to that. You know, I hear people complain about the cost of child care. Well, how is that person watching your child going to afford to be able to live if we don't pay a certain wage, even eating out and clothes and things like that? You know, I'm definitely a penny pincher, but I don't mind paying a fair amount so that all of us can be lifted up, right? And so, you know, we have to, you know, for example, when we talk about, you know, when we go out to eat, you know, tipping, what if they just paid those folks a decent, livable wage, even if it means that your hamburger is going to cost you $2 more? That's going to help all of us in the long run.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Spriggs, is there an uh-oh, and this is for you also, Michelle, but I'll start with Dr. Spriggs, as you know, Joe or Jane Sixpack walking the street, working every day, is there an indicator that we would see that makes us say, uh-oh, something isn't the way that it has been? What should the average person look for that would suggest that a recession is imminent?
Well, there are signs that it's possible, and we went through that: slower home sales, slower auto sales, slowed new business formation. The key number that you're going to see is the first Friday of each month, the BLS reports what job growth was. If job growth is negative as opposed to positive, that's the time to get really nervous. It's very rare that we have 2 months running of negative job growth. we can get it for fluky reasons, bad weather is just one of them. So if you see two straight months of job loss, then you got to get nervous.
Mm-hmm. From your perspective, Michelle, are there any foundational uh-ohs that would indicate that something isn't necessarily right? You know, for those people who are not, for example, fans of CNBC or what have you, and pay that much attention to job growth or declines.
I mean, I think Dr. Spriggs was right. You start looking at even at where you work. If the managers are, you know, calling meetings and say, well, you know, they start wringing their hands, they don't actually say layoffs before it gets to that point. But you can feel the tension. You know, they start to cut back on travel. They say things like, you know, hey, I saw you took two pens. You only need one. You know, those kinds of things on your job are signals that your employer is worried. And if your employer is worried, then again, there's, you know, job cuts coming, and job cuts means people don't have money, and people don't have money, they don't go out to eat and so forth. And if they're not buying things, the retailers are going to start, you know, you where you might have saw, you know, 10 shirts, or, you know, two or three in your size, you know, you only see one. That means they've cut production. So you start to see those little things. But the average person isn't going to really notice all of that, which is why I go back to just the fundamentals of your financial life. Now is the time to just make sure that you're doing what you need to do with your money. And here's the thing. Then it doesn't matter whether there's a recession or not. I mean, Dave asked about, you know, what about your investing? Listen, you can't invest based on the daily gyrations of the stock markets or even whether or not there's a recession. You should have a plan in place so that no matter what the economy does, you can weather it, which means if you're closer to retirement, you're not going to be all in equities. You're going to have some money put aside to weather the market and give it some time to get back to, you know, quote-unquote, quote, normal. If you're in your 20s and 30s and all, then you've got decades for the market to do what it does, which is go up and go down and go up and go down. But on average, based on past performance, you're going to get a decent return. And so you plan like that. Listen, you ought to be in a financial class. You know, if your church or your community center is holding financial workshops, you need to be at those workshops. My church, you know, I like my church, First Baptist Church of Glen Arden. We are having a women's conference in October, and I'm going to have a day-long session from like 8 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon to talk about finances. You ought to be there if you're a woman, you know, and not just
that. Maybe can I go if I put on a wig? Because I mean, I still want to know. So if I put on a wig and some old thrift store heels, and you know.
But I mean, I mentioned that to say that there are organizations and all that are trying to help you prepare yourself for these kinds of times. My church, you know, I have a financial ministry every single month of the year except for August to take off. There's a workshop about your money, and so there's no excuse for you not to be in a preparation mode for whatever the economy is doing. Don't wait until the recession gets here, because then it's too late. You need to be preparing yourself all along.
Okay. I need to take a break, but when we come back, we talked about what you should do. I want to ask about perhaps some of the things that you should not do as you prepare for a recession that we don't know if it's coming or not. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about a recession. Is it possible? What would it look like, and what can you do about it? So, if you're sitting here, you're listening to this conversation, and say you're a younger person, say you are a college graduate, and you've got a decent job, but that also means that you are old enough to remember what happened in the odds, you know, 2007, 2008. You may remember what happened if your parents lost their jobs, or there was a threat of losing a home or foreclosure or all of that. And now you hear recession and it's scary. What is your best advice, Dr. Spriggs, for those people who may be in their 20s or 30s who are frozen in place?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is since the recovery, we've exacerbated income inequality. And part of the strain in the economy now is the result of that. So rich people aren't poor people with more money. They're different people. And so when they have the disproportionate share of the money, there are certain markets in which they are the market. So half the housing, half the owned dwelling housing, not the rental market, half the owned home market is from the top 10%. That means they are the market. So what's affordable to them is the market. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, diamonds are not affordable to many people. They're priced at a point, not paying attention to what you make because it's not your market. You don't determine the market. And the problem with an economy in which 90% of people are priced out, essentially, of what's affordable from the perspective of housing, it's a problem because it's so vital to the way our economy works. They are the market for higher education because they're over half the market. They're the market for health care because they're over half the market. So these price points are moving away from middle-income people. And so for younger workers who haven't reached their full earnings potential, it means potentially having to delay being able to buy a home because they haven't reached an income that gets them close enough to the price point where housing isn't eating up all of their income. And that's the difficulty we're having right now in our economy. That generation is supposed to be able to afford a home, and they're supposed to be buying homes from us old folks. So this is a problem, this level of inequality. Elections have consequences. So one thing people should know is they elected the right person in 2008. They need to be thinking about who are you electing, because who's in control matters. It's not irrelevant who's the president. You've seen, even today, as we were talking before, trying to understand, is the president for payroll tax cut? He's against the payroll tax cut. No, I'm for it. No, I'm against it. He's running circles around himself. That's not the time for indecision. If the economy goes down, you want someone who has a plan that makes sense, that is sound from an economist's perspective and making a recovery happen. So people should be paying attention. 2020 is an election year. You should be paying attention to who's controlling the reins.
And to that point, when we've seen it, and this has, you can think what you want about the president, whether you like him or you don't, but any president, by virtue of the office that he holds in the country that he is president of, the most powerful country on the planet, that if anything that he says can move the markets and by default move the economy. And so the volatility that comes from the White House is often demonstrated on the stock market. And that could make people give you a great deal of consternation.
That's why you can't have a plan based on the president's tweets. You can't have a plan based on, oh my gosh, the market went down, you know, 800 points. I've got to get totally out. You can't operate your financial life that way. You will go crazy, and you'll lose a lot of money. So right now for the young folks, first of all, I meet a lot of young adults, and, you know, I think they get a bad rap about, you know, whether or not they handle their money well. They actually are handling their money well, but the problem is that a lot of them come out with student loan debt. You know, a lot of them, they're not getting the wages that will help them get an affordable apartment or, you know, eventually buy a house. So, you know, what I tell young adults is that, especially if you're coming out of college with a lot of debt, if you can, stay at home until you get that debt paid off. Or, you know, you might still need to have three or four roommates until you can get that debt paid off. That's the most important thing. Dig yourself out of that debt, then save some money for a cushion, and then you will have the stability to be able to buy a house and buy a car, hopefully with cash, you know, and start a family. I mean, lots of young adults, you know, waiting later to get married or even have children, which causes all kinds of other issues. But so, you know, the talk of the recession shouldn't make you feel like dire, like tomorrow, doom and gloom. It's just a wake-up call. And I'm very positive about the ability of people to manage their money in a way that they can get the things that they really want, which is, you know, a stable income, you know, a home, you know, be able to send their kids to college debt-free. I think that is possible, but you just got to do some planning and do some things to set yourself up for financial success.
And in this time of uncertainty, what would you recommend people not do, Michelle?
Well, again, you know, if you got that credit card debt that you can't pay off, please stop using it. So don't go into more debt. Don't, you know, buy that car if you've got debt and student loan debt. You know, not don't even buy that home if you got a whole bunch of student loan debt. I know the housing people are like, what? You know, but I'm just telling you, you'll set yourself up for success by having a saving cushion and getting rid of all your debt before you take on these big things like home ownership and having a child and getting married and all those kinds of things. That's what I would say. You know, stop digging. You know, there's a phrase that if you're in a hole, stop digging. And that's what I would hope for people to do.
Final thoughts from you, Dr. Spriggs.
Well, I can't say enough that the macroeconomy matters, and people need to know that elections have consequences. They should be paying attention to these candidates. Having this person that we currently have in control creates uncertainty for business and for everyday consumers. So that's not a world in which the economy can function well. And you got to take that seriously. You have to take voting seriously.
Mm-hmm. And for so many things that we talk about on this program, it often always comes back to voting. So something to definitely pay attention to. Well, Dr. Spriggs, Dr. William Spriggs and Michelle Singletary, you both get my vote. And thank you so much for being a part of this program. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, August 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.